hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at aura.com/listen. That's aura.com/listen.
Hey, Tommy, can you believe we've had the new Forerunner 6th generation now for almost 2 months?
That's right. So we are going to tell you what it's like living with the Forerunner, but more importantly, we're going to show you. We're going to get this thing out on the road, tell you all about its kind of goods and the bads and the quirks and the great features and some of the bad things, and we'll fill you in on what it's really like.
Yeah, and there's a lot of really good stuff about this car, and there's a few little gripes that I have, so stay tuned for those. But since we're here at the ranch, we thought we would show you the entire TFL fleet. And so let's do a quick walk around, Tommy, of all the cars that many of the cars that we own, starting with our Range Rover P38.
Yeah, so this is Perry. This is one of the most hated Range Rovers to ever exist. The P38 has a reputation, in the US at least, for being probably the worst of the worst when it comes to reliability. But Perry has been awesome. This is a 2001 Range Rover HSE with a 4.6, and it has been a pleasure to own.
Yeah, let me show you the front of this Range Rover, because this is my favorite part. This is, to me, the best era of Range Rovers. They're starting to become popular, finally. People say they're the least reliable, which is saying a lot for a Range Rover, Tommy. But I love the way that it's very square-jawed. It has that command driving position. So this, to me, was kind of when Range Rover invented, for real, luxury and off-roading, and stuck them together in a vehicle that just makes sense.
Well, I think that the Classic did that just as well. This was a transition era, because you have like the air suspension Range Rovers of the early 2000s, and then you have the beautiful kind of vintage Range Rovers of the 70s and the 80s and the 90s. And this was a kind of a weird transition where the Range Rover Classic was so old that it was just antiquated, but they weren't quite at to the point to developing the air suspension. Independent suspension, I should say, Range Rovers. So this was a bridge. It has solid axles, but it had air suspension, and it had some modern stuff, but it had some vintage stuff. It's pretty cool.
All right, the reason I said this was where Range Rover got the reputation for luxury and off-roadiness was because the Classic Range Rover, Tommy, as you know, has no component that will not fail. That car is the worst. I mean, by modern standards, this P38, right, looks like a Toyota Tacoma compared to the Classic. If you own a Classic, or if you have owned a Classic, you know what I'm talking about. But everything that can go wrong with that car will go wrong, including the frame, the drivetrain, the brakes, the interior, the AC, everything on that car fails. There's nothing that will not fail on a Classic.
So you want to know a secret?
Yeah.
This is a Classic underneath, but less reliable.
No, the Classic is less reliable.
No, because they went from the 3.5, which was actually okay, to the 3.9, to the 4.6, which was a mess. So I completely disagree. These are less reliable than the Classic. You know why? Because they all had air suspension, and they have 100% failure.
You should talk to Kyle about his Classic.
Yeah, but the point is,
typical.
This classical. Is a Classic underneath. It's the Range Rover Classic.
It runs, it works, it's got 155,000 miles. There are no Classics with this many miles that actually drive. Now, we are missing a Classic part, which is right there. We have it, we just haven't put it on. It just looks so bad without that. So I think that's got to be next on our to-do list.
You have turned the entire UK against you in one statement there. There's tons of Range Rover Classics with over 150,000 miles.
Yeah, I don't believe there are any. I don't think there's one.
This one doesn't have 150,000 miles, by the way.
How much?
It's 130,000.
I'm off by 20.
And genuinely, I kid you not, we're not going to keep arguing about this, but these are related to Classics underneath.
I get what you're saying. Once again, we're bickering, so let's stop bickering. I have my opinion, you have your opinion. Mine is right, yours is wrong.
So the interior of these is really, really the highlight for me. They're incredibly comfortable with this kind of cool bucket seat and the black piping. Just beautiful interiors, incredibly rattly. Nothing is really attached to anything else.
But it's got that high seating position, right? The command driving position that makes you feel like you're on top of the world.
Yeah, it does have that position, and it also has low range. It's got, it turns out I didn't know this until I did the video, it has a viscous it's basically LSD for the center diff, which is pretty cool. Full-time four-wheel drive. Yeah, they're really up. Case and I took this thing off-road at our off-road park at the same time that we had the new Lexus LX700H, which is the new over-trail, triple-locked, crazy Land Cruiser. And I think that this did better because the approach angle and the departure angle and the breakover were just more suited. It was unbelievable, and it was $4,000, so who cares if you break it? Whereas the Lexus was $116,000.
This is the great thing. A lot of these cars that we have here are either completely depreciated or on the upswing in appreciation. And, you know, people always worry about buying old Range Rovers. At $4,000, this isn't going to get any cheaper, right?
Well, it might. If the engine blows, if you blow the head gasket,
of course, yeah. If you blow
then
the
it's going to be
yeah, but that's any car.
Negative money in this car.
But that's any car with 130,000 miles. Name one car with 130,000 miles that you could replace the engine for. And not like classic, you know, expensive sports cars, of course. I'm talking about like...
any Land Cruiser, you could do head gaskets and come out okay. But you have a 4.6 that has head gasket failures or slip liners, which was really common.
By the way,
cars.
I think the shine's coming off the Land Cruiser. I'm seeing the prices, especially of the 70s, start to come kind of back to earth. And I think that's because those things are so underpowered.
Okay.
Hey, I want to thank our friends at GM. This is a tan-out cover, truck bed cover, for our next vehicle that we're going to talk about. And GM sent this to us. It's an electric cover, Tommy, that rolls up kind of like a Tesla.
Sweet.
And we have yet to install it, but GM, I really want to thank you for sending that to us. We have just been using this truck nonstop, and so that's why we have not had time to put the cover on. We also have had quite an interesting accident with it that's really on me. I'll show you that in a second. But Tommy and I just drove this back from California, and we've got all three of the heavy-duty diesels right now for review. So Andre's been doing a lot of driving with this.
Yeah, and we used this to go to LA. We used it just to tow to Moab. We just did a Model T and Moab video. This was the tow rig. So it has, oh no, that wasn't the tow rig. We used a Tremor. My mind is just failing me. But this truck's got 5,000 miles on it in just a few months. And it's been kind of all over the country, and it has been awesome. Everybody loves the, at the office, loves this new Trail Boss.
And I have to say, I created a little ouchie backing up into the office studio. Forgot to bring this in, and these rearview mirrors are backordered, so I feel horrible about it. But yeah, I did a little bit of damage there.
So these Silverado Trail Boss is kind of a cool truck because it offers a little bit more capability with the KO3 tires, the G80 locking rear diff. It's got slightly nicer shocks.
Functional hood scoop?
Yep, this is the Duramax, the diesel. It's got tons of power. And I know that all HD trucks are expensive, but compared to like some of the other trucks we've been testing lately that are into the six digits, this thing at, what, 71,000?
It was 77,000, we got 3,000 off, so 74.
Yeah, I mean, you get heated seats, you get the big screens, you get Apple CarPlay, you get pretty much everything you would need. I'm not saying it's good value, because that would be insane, but it's a lot of truck.
I think it's good value. I think you get a lot of truck for 70, let's call it $5,000. I have really become very much impressed by this truck. Now, as you guys know, if you've been following us, we had the Ram, the previous generation Cummins, and that was much more of a trucky truck. In other words, the engine was much more diesel-y. The truck felt more like a big rig. This feels much more like a car, and I kind of like that, Tommy. It's so quiet on the inside. It has all the latest and greatest safety features. It has all the latest and greatest conveniences. If I was to drive a heavy-duty truck on a daily basis, this would be the one I choose.
I would get that new Tremor. That thing is really cool.
Fair.
It's so comfortable.
Yeah, it's also, well, we can't talk about the price because it's embargoed, but it's more.
It's very expensive, yeah. All right, so here we've got our Willys Jeep. This is an actual World War II Jeep. This is a Willys MB from 1945. And actually, you might notice it's missing its seat, and that's because Case and I have been doing some work on it, so we just put a new fuel sender in. The old one was absolutely destroyed. It was just
and did you fix
away.
It?
No, that didn't fix it. So the fuel sender was kaput, and I also think the gauge could be kaput. But the bigger reason that the tools are here is because we were having some pretty big carb issues where it was just dumping fuel out of the carburetor. And I took it apart and figured out that the float had a leak in it and was just allowing fuel to enter the carburetor constantly, and it was really raining
gas.
What
a tiny little carburetor, so cute.
Yeah, a little Carter carburetor, so I took it off and I put a new But I didn't put a new float in because the float they sent me was the wrong size.
How could they get the wrong size? I mean, these things were one size fits all. How could they get that wrong?
Well, this float was...
bigger than the carburetor.
Actually, almost bigger than the carburetor, you're right. So I actually went ahead and re-soldered the old float, which was definitely a learning experience, but it seems to be holding up. So now the Willys is back in action, and we may or may not take it to Easter Jeep Safari this year.
I'd like to take it.
Yeah, I would like to.
I want to drive it around. Does it drive?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so let's take it to Easter Jeep Safari. So if you guys are going to be at EJS, if all goes well, we'll use that truck to tow this Jeep with Blazy, because we're going to take Blazy along to EJS this year. So I'm really super stoked, or both.
All right, so let's talk about our Mustang.
Stoked. It's half psyched and half stoked.
It's
well, no, hold on.
Psyched.
You see what I'm going for there.
Should we talk about the Mustang?
No, because we should talk about why we bought this car, because it has a lot to do with this car. So why don't you talk about the Mustang, and then we'll talk about our newest acquisition, which we just got yesterday, which is this car.
Yeah, so this is a 1968 Mustang California Special that we bought, I think, last year. We're almost a year into owning this car. And it's a really, really cool car. It's a 289.
Oh, I think we've owned it longer than a year, Tommy. It might be 2 years now.
I don't think it's quite that long.
Really?
I can tell you when we bought it.
All right, I bet you we bought it at least 2 years ago now.
We bought it in July of last year.
Okay.
Yep, so this is a 1968 Ford Mustang California Special. It's got a 289 in it and a little C4 automatic. And this car was restored quite nicely. Someone put a lot of money and time and effort into it. And it's been really reliable. It starts up every time. The transmission works great. The suspension's okay. We did some brake work on it. And it's just been a really good little driver. But that's the reason that we've been on the hunt for a C3, and specifically this C3, because this is a 1968 as well. So we just bought this car. It's a little sketchy in person, some of the paint on this car.
It's not sketchy. It's honest. I wouldn't call it sketchy.
Honest.
It drives well. It's been mechanically restored by the previous owner. So it's got a brand new carburetor. It's got brand new exhaust. It's got brand new suspension. I actually like this car a lot. But one of the reasons I'm so in love with this new old C3 is because this is the first year. So 68 was the first year for the C3. But now we can do comparisons between Chevy and Ford. And what a classic comparison we have here, right? We can do drag races, we can do cross-country trips. I mean, these two now can go head-to-head.
It would have made more sense to get a Camaro in retrospect.
Well,
because that's kind of the head-to-head. But here's the thing, actually.
Well, that's a California Special, Tommy. That was expensive. This is a bean can. This has no options.
Actually,
zero.
I think that was still cheaper, even with the California Special package.
This was like the cheapest one you could buy. The only option on this guy was the fact that it's a convertible.
Yeah, and it has FM radio.
It has an FM radio.
But no, this is really cool. So we got 327 versus 289 here. Look, C3s, especially early ones, are getting pretty expensive. A lot of like a really nice early C3 is probably going to be 40, 50, 60 grand. But this one was $24,000 because, like I said, some of the paint's a little sketchy here and there.
Well, somebody repainted it. So it was this kind of cool bronze color, and then somebody repainted it Safari yellow. But there is obviously, it's one step above like the cheap rattle can.
Yeah,
it's a spray job.
But I do love this car because mechanically it's super sorted. It runs and drives well.
It's perfect. It's a perfect 10-foot car. And you know how like Mustang and Corvette owners like to think that like to say that their cars are special because they've got like a unique build? Well, I'm telling you, Tommy, this is the only 68 T3 that is a convertible. All right, you following me on this one? That has no options, that used to be bronze, that was repainted yellow, that has a fuel gauge that doesn't work. No, sorry, clock that doesn't work.
There
so it's
go.
One of one.
One of one car. Yeah, and we're learning a lot of interesting things about these cars. So like 68 was a one-off year, and they changed a ton of stuff for 69. And my favorite example are the door handles, which you put your hand in here, and on every other C3 Corvette, that's your door handle. You push down and the door pops open. But on the 68, for whatever reason, you have to push in on the button.
Don't pull out the other.
And that's how you pop the door open, which is just so funny. And there's a bunch of other interior changes. And I think like 69, they had chrome on the grills here. And 68 was the only year that had the...
three-speed?
I think that's true. But
four-speed optional.
It's also the only year that has the reverse light underneath the lights instead of built into the taillights.
Which don't work.
They don't work.
It's getting more special. So three-speed manual, guys, not automatic, manual. So look, I love the C3. It's kind of the car when I was a kid that I had up on my wall because that was kind of when I was growing up. The problem with the C3, they made it from 68 to 82, is that after like 73, the cars just became choked with emissions, and then they had those weird like bumpers, and then they in 82 they went to the Crossfire, which was the first fuel injected car, which also breaks and is impossible to fix. So these early C3s are the ones you want. They're the valuable ones, and so this actually cost a lot more than like a 76, 77. Did you know 77 was the most popular year for the C3?
Mm-hmm.
Out of all of the Cs, I think Chevy sold something like 35,000 Corvettes in 77. So in the malaise era of Corvette, that was a year that out of the last, 60 years, where they sold the most. Hey, Tommy, you know we have this rule that when a car enters the fleet, another one has to leave. And so I am super sad and super happy that we have sold this 2007 Aston Martin. And who is the lucky buyer?
It's me! Wahoo! Yeah, so I've been selling a bunch of stuff lately to be able to afford our $33,000 V8 Vantage, and I just paid $33,000 to the company, and now it's mine. But this was a dream car of mine when I was a kid. We had a chance to test this car back in like 2009 when I was just a little guy, and I fell in love with it. And ever since then, I've been dreaming of them. And now that they're getting relatively affordable, I finally pulled the trigger on this one. So 2007 V8 Vantage manual transmission. And yeah, just bought it, and I'm really excited for the adventures this summer.
I mean, we've got four really beautiful cars here, from the Mustang to the Corvette to the Aston to the IA, Tommy. And in my mind, this is the most pretty car here. I love that Coke bottle shape. I love the smooth, elegant lines. And this car is actually very small, but because of the design language, right, because of the way that the car is kind of stretched to the back and then this little ducktail on the spoiler ducktail, the car just looks much bigger and much longer than it really is. So you've got these classic proportions, long hood, short body, short tail, kind of like the Corvette. So I'm so happy that you bought it. It's also a manual, and dude, 390 horsepower. It's a supercar, according to Haggerty. You want to tell them that story?
Well, I think we talked about it in a previous podcast, but Haggerty said under no circumstances can I drive this car with the company. But then I called them up individually and said, hey, I'd like to buy this car. And they're like, yeah, that should be fine. And that's because even though the category of car is supercar, it's not really that super. It's 380 horsepower and 0 to 60 in 5 seconds, which was pretty good for 2007, but it's not that fast by modern standards. But I think it's absolutely gorgeous. I think it's aged incredibly well, and hopefully, fingers crossed, it'll be pretty reliable for me. These cars, even though people see that they're British and that, you know, that comes with some baggage, they do seem to hold up really, really well.
Yeah, and we bought it sight unseen. And one of the things that determines this car's value is if it has a complete service history. And I was so terrified that it didn't have a complete service history. And then I looked in the glove box, it was an owner's manual. I looked in the back, and it's got stamps galore, Tommy. This thing was well loved and well cared for. So I think you got a good one.
So next we have the BMW i8. This is another incredibly depreciated car. So that Aston was $110,000 new. We paid $33,000 for it. This thing was, I think, $120,000 new. Something like that?
I was like, yeah, between 120 and 150, depending on which one you got.
And we picked it up for $48,000. And this is a lot newer. This is a 2015 BMW i8. And this is a car, of course, that has a little bit of a reputation for being a little boring because it's a hybrid and it's just a three-cylinder. But it's actually such a great car to live with and own. We raced it against our C8 Corvette in the quarter mile at elevation where we live. It beat the C8 Corvette, which is unbelievable for a three-cylinder. 0 to 60 when new is 4.2 seconds. 0 to 60 10 years later, 4.2 seconds. So it's holding up incredibly well.
As you can see, it's plugged in because this is one of the first plug-in hybrids, and the technology in this car is amazing.
We should find a way to route this so it's not poking into the paint here, huh?
I don't think it's gonna hurt the paint. It's a carbon composite tub, Tommy. But like I said, the technology in this thing is amazing. How many motors does it have?
Three. I think it's three.
Yeah. One motor on each wheel and one sandwiched in between the six-speed automatic transmission.
No, I think it's different.
No, maybe it's two motors, one in the front and one in the back.
Yeah, it's three. You got the motor in the front for the front axle. You've got a motor in the rear that acts as an actual propulsion device, and then there's like a little generator back there. But what's unique about this car is, unlike a Tesla where there's no transmission, this car has a 6-speed automatic in the rear, and it has a 2-speed automatic in the front, so the front axle. So that sounds incredibly complicated, which it is, but they really hold up super well. There's kind of a reputation on older BMWs for reliability, but these are breaking that reputation, and a lot of people have put a lot of miles on these with no problems.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And then this is my mom's car that's just here temporarily, and for those of you who don't know, my mom recently passed away, the car came to me, and we're just in the process of kind of getting it back in ship shape. She had done a lot of deferred maintenance, so, yeah. So I finally got it titled. I have new tires on it and just getting it kind of back into some kind of order, and then we're going to probably use it as a runaround car.
Yep, that's right. This is a 2015 Mini Countryman. Really cool cars, actually. Cooper S, so it's got a turbo engine, it's got all-wheel drive, it's got a really funky interior, and they're super fun. If you're looking for just kind of a fun, small family car, and you're looking at like a Golf, look at one of these instead. They're really good in the snow, and they're very zoomy to drive. I really like driving it a lot.
Yeah, it's when Minis were still Minis. I know the Countryman isn't Mini, but compared to new Countryman, it's Mini.
So next up,
is the car the truck that would be right here.
Yeah, so we have a Ford Ranger Raptor long-term test. Andre is currently off-roading it right now against a press car, a press truck, the Tacoma TRD Pro. So they're going to have an off-road shootout that they're shooting in the mountains right now. And then Bill, of course, this is our 2024, I think it's 24.
I think it's 25, dude.
25. Jeep Wrangler.
It could be 24. I think 25 they went to the electric windows.
Yeah, in 25 they got rid of the crank windows. Yeah. 2024 Jeep Wrangler Sport. Total base model, nothing. We put Rubicon wheels on it, and we're proving that you can have so much fun off-road with even the cheap Jeep. So I'm really excited. I haven't been driving this car too much because, look, I love Wranglers, but when you have we're very fortunate, we have a garage full of really interesting cars. On the road, a lot of these cars drive better. Off-road, I don't really think anything drives better. But I'm excited to be able to take the tops off in the summer. So that's what I'm waiting for, is the summer to come.
Yeah, and we're going to take it to Easter Jeep Safari, but if you got the old World War II Jeep running, I think we should take that, because that would be a much more fun to zip around in than just another new Wrangler.
So my only concern about this,
yeah.
And I ran into this problem with our Model T.
Okay.
These 1920s and 30s and 40s cars are incredibly great and fun to drive,
yeah.
But they really don't tow well.
Oh, well, can we put the windshield down?
Yeah, we can put the windshield down.
Well, we'll show them what happened with the Model T.
Yeah, you put the windshield down and you can kind of strap it down and put it on backwards.
It needs to be in an enclosed trailer.
Yeah, because things just start to break.
But you guys brought this back from California.
Yeah, but it's not as nice here as it was in California. These seats, do you see how the seats are brown?
Yeah.
In California, they were tan. Things just get absolutely, like, all of that is dirt. I have to figure out how to get out.
Yeah, I know, but come on. To have this at Easter Jeep Safari is such a dream of mine, Tom.
This is such a nicely restored Jeep that transporting it in a open trailer kind of kills my soul a little bit.
All right, well, let's keep going and show them a few other cars that we have in the fleet, and then we'll get to the Forerunner.
Did you show them my tree that fell over?
Yeah, we did a whole video on that.
Yeah. So we've had some insane winds up here, and it's the worst I've ever seen. And we had this beautiful pine tree, which is now in a pile over there, which was terrible because this tree had probably been there for 40, 50 years. And with the 50, 60, 70 mile an hour winds, it hit it at the right angle at the right time, and it fell down. So I'm really sad about our tree.
Yeah, so let's show them the rest of the fleet, your fleet as well as the TFL fleet. So here we have a Tesla Model S that we just purchased. It's got 100,000 miles, and we were trying to figure out if a Tesla Model S with 100,000 miles has enough range, and in fact how much range it has lost, and it hasn't lost all that much range. You can watch the videos, but the cool thing about this one, which we didn't know when we purchased it, why are the flies on it?
I don't know. I don't know why there's so many flies around it.
The cool thing about this one is it's got
someone's going to make a clever comment about that, no doubt.
Yes, it's got free supercharging. So it's a 2014, and it's got lifetime of free supercharging. It's got about, it's a P8, no, it's an 85, not the P85. Mm-hmm. It's just one heck of a good car. It's a lot of car for $13,000, Tommy.
Yeah, and everything works on it. It's a little clunky and rattly, But as a just an efficient machine to get you around town, for $13,000, it still has 230 miles of range. It still is incredibly advanced with its technology and the big screen and the route planning and all the things that it does that is still better than a lot of its competition today, 10 years later. So this has been a great daily driver. I use it to go to the airport, and the range has been perfect. It has had no issues over the past few months, and we've put like 3,000 or 4,000 miles on it, and it just keeps chugging. It's been great.
And Mary named a Clooney after George.
Yes, that's right, because it's old and silver. That's right.
Silver Fox, right?
We can go this way, I think.
You might get some light in here.
Okay.
So you can kind of see. So Tommy keeps his personal cars in here, so this is one of your personal cars.
Yeah, this is my 1984 300 SD turbo diesel Mercedes. This was an absolute tank. This has actually been seeing a lot of use too. When it's sunny, I've been using this as my daily driver. And it is probably the slowest car in the entire company. And across everything, there's nothing slower, 123 horsepower. But it really has just such a sense of everlasting fortitude that I think is super cool. So I don't know what I'm going to do with this car long term, but I just put a lot of money into making it pretty much perfect mechanically. It's got new ball joints. It's got some transmission work. It's got all the leaks fixed now. And it's a really good car. It's an acquired taste because it is so slow. Like, I know you don't like driving it. Case doesn't like driving it.
It's dangerously slow, Tommy.
It's dangerously slow.
Like 0 to 60 in like 3 days.
Well, it's probably 25 seconds.
All right, and here's our problem child. I should say my problem child. It's an 87 911. And the top is once again broken.
Yes, so as you can see, for the third time, it has once again stopped moving, and it is, of course, stuck halfway open. This car has been the biggest money pit. I think we paid $35 for it, and we're probably in it
30.
Another $35.
Yeah, probably, yeah.
So, the good news is it's worth $40. So that's some great news. But it has a new top. It's got a new interior. It's got some new infotainment stuff. It really is sorted, but this stupid power top won't stop failing on it, which has just been the bane of our existence.
Yeah, it won't close, and then once you try to close it a few times, it stops working, and then you can't open it.
Yeah.
So you could potentially have it as a convertible forever, or you could have it as a closed convertible forever, but apparently the magic of the convertible you don't have.
It doesn't convert.
It doesn't convert, so you could have one or the other. This is your other Mercedes. Tommy, you're becoming quite the Mercedes man.
Yeah, no, and this is a car I've had, I think, almost 3 years now. This is a 1972 Mercedes 250C. And it was my wedding car, so I'm kind of stuck with it forever, I think. But it's such a good car. It's another car that just doesn't break. It works constantly. Super reliable, super comfortable, looks cool. Yeah, it's been a really great classic car to own.
I wonder how long before the price on these coupes with B-pillar, right? The B-pillar-less mm-hmm. Mercedes will start to come up, and people will understand that these are really cool cars because they're not valuable right now.
Yeah, they're like 10 to 15K will get you a really good one.
And go ahead.
I think this one was 12,000.
And here is our Honda Acty. It's a Chinese. It's a Japanese K truck. And we bought it, what, a year ago, 2 years ago?
Yeah, for a series that we never ended up doing. And it's kind of been just a little work vehicle around the ranch. So it lives a pretty hard life, but it's been incredibly reliable. Another car that just doesn't break. I use it to take the trash to the curb. I need to use it coming up here in a few weeks, and Morgan has some big gardening plans that she's excited about. So it's going to be used to move mulch and soil and stuff around the property. And yeah, four-wheel drive, manual transmission, little engine.
Engine's in the bed. It's right there.
I made the mistake, which was pretty catastrophic, of putting 5 gallons of gasoline into the crankcase instead of the fuel tank, which was very unfortunate because, of course, it can't hold 5 gallons, and it leaked everywhere. It was horrible. But put new oil in it and new filter, and it's been fine.
And the biggest problem with this car is we don't have a title to it, and we can't get a title to it because
it's not legal in Colorado.
Colorado won't let you title them. So at some point, I'm going to be really bummed but happy to see it go, Tommy.
Well,
I mean, it's a good truck.
Montana. You could do Montana.
You could. It's a good truck for around the...
It works great on the ranch. You just can't drive it on the road.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of space to drive it on the ranch.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, and it's got a huge bed, which is great.
The bed is great. And then two more vehicles we need to show them. Let's show them the last two. This, of course, tow please on the license plate is your personal Land Rover LR3.
Yep. Yeah, 2006. Year and a half with the LR3, by the way. 15,000 miles, and it has been once again completely perfect. My wife drives this in the winter when it's really snowy, and then I drive it when I need to move stuff. So if you look right now, it's
full of stuff.
Completely packed full of, here. Look at the trunk. This is a better view.
It holds a lot of stuff.
It does.
Pretty amazing.
Yes.
And this is also the base model.
Jam packed with everything, and it will carry whatever you need to in absolute comfort. Yeah. So 15,000 miles, and like I said, once again, it just keeps working. You know, I'm going to do an oil change on it this weekend, but you know, it's third oil change since I've owned it, and that's all it's really needed, other than some transmission fluid in it.
And perhaps it's one of my favorite vehicles that we just had a oopsie with. And you took this Model T pickup, 1927, to Moab, and you actually took it off-road, Tommy. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was a great adventure. One of the coolest that Case and I have done in a long time. We drove it up Hurrah Pass. But like I said about things falling off, I'm pretty sure this thing had a mirror on it.
It did have a mirror. It's missing, Tommy. Where's the mirror?
It no longer has that. It's also got a cracked windshield now, and yeah, so we need to look into getting like an enclosed trailer if we're going to keep long distance hauling these classics.
Yeah, well, that's another expense, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
I mean, we already have two trailers up here. Do we want? I guess we can have a third one.
But yeah, this car has been such a gem of an automobile. I mean, it's been to the top of Pikes Peak. It's been off road. It's been on the highway. It's been on country roads. It's been in the city. It goes everywhere.
All right, so look at me, guys. Look at me. If you are an enclosed trailer manufacturer and you want to be featured on one of the most popular YouTube channels, or one of the 8 most popular YouTube channels dealing with automotive. Okay, one of the 8 lesser popular, okay, one very popular channel and maybe 7 that are sort of popular. We would love to have an enclosed trailer contact us at AskATFLTruck, and you can get a lot of publicity if you lend us a enclosed trailer for a year or two. That's what we've done with some of the other trailers.
I will say,
yeah?
I've got oil on me now.
What'd you do?
When we bought this car,
yeah,
it had been sitting for a ton of years.
Yes.
And it was completely dry. It didn't leak anything. And then once we started driving it, it leaks everything out of every hole. I mean, it's leaking things I didn't even know it had in it.
Is it leaking honey?
No, I wish. That would be awesome. No, it's leaking. I mean, there's oil coming out of every crevice, which is unbelievable. So,
well, you know, the tolerances in these old engines weren't exactly,
it was like mummified, and then once we started using it, it unmummified, and now it's very leaky.
Hold on, let's walk over here and show them the two trailers that we have. I was actually serious about the trailer.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Because we have two trailers here at the ranch, and we use them pretty much on a weekly basis, Tommy. We have our big techs that we bought.
It's been almost a daily basis.
Yeah, and then our friends at Luma have lent us a trailer. So when we do things like the Ike Gauntlet, we use them for towing weight. And of course, we move a lot of cars around when we're going to Moab or other places. And so we do have two trailers, but you're right, an enclosed trailer, if you build them, we would love to be able to feature those trailers, your trailers, on our channel.
So this Aluma is pretty cool too, because if you compare it to the Iron Bowl that's next to it, the Iron Bowl as
Big Tex.
The Big Tex, thank you. The Big Tex, as is the case with most trailers, narrows, and then of course, you know, widens where the fenders are, whereas this Aluma is full width all the way across. And it's so wide that if you have a really short side-by-side, you can even pull it up and park it horizontally or perpendicularly to the trailer.
And you know, also you can open the door.
Yeah, which is really great too. It's a super tall trailer. So like if you're moving a sports car, you can clear the fender wells, whereas this Big Tex, you're kind of stuck. So there's a lot of advantages to this Luma trailer. Plus it's like 1,700 pounds. It's bigger than the...
This is 3,000.
Yeah, it's bigger than the Big Tex. And there's a lot of cool stuff.
I gotta say, I can't believe how bad these Heartland Radial STs are. We replaced these last year, Tommy, and they're already shot again. We've probably put, what?
15,000
miles. 15,000 miles on this trailer since we replaced them. And look. It's already...
Yeah, they're shot.
They're already shot. All right, let's do a quick walk around to the Forerunner, and then we'll jump in and take it for a ride, and we'll tell you how it does. How about if we take it for a ride to lunch, Tommy? I'm pretty hungry. How about you?
Yeah, that sounds good.
All right, so let's talk about this Forerunner. We promised you the good, the bad, and the ugly. I don't think there is any ugly, Tommy. I think Toyota did a really good job with this, starting with the powertrain. I don't want to spend a lot of time on it. We've done a lot of videos, but they went from a 6-cylinder to a 4-cylinder turbo, the same powertrain that's in the Tacoma. And for some reason, online, people, especially on the Taco, hate the 4-cylinder turbo, but here in the Forerunner, they don't seem to mind it. I don't understand it. Same powertrain, same basic horsepower.
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of something called the internet?
I have.
Okay. Well, from what I've read on the internet, everybody hates this engine.
But not in the
Forerunner. In the Forerunner specifically.
Really?
Because,
I've heard a lot more heat on the Taco.
Dad, you should have read the comments on my last video.
Yeah.
Because it went from the 4-liter V6, which is venerable, to an unknown, smaller turbo engine that people think is not going to last.
It's a lot of things. Thirsty, slow, compared to a 5-speed.
The old one?
Yeah, but venerable, I'm not sure, okay?
I think it is venerable because they are so long-lasting. Yeah, people are really upset about this engine.
And this makes its power way down low, 1,700 RPMs. It just feels so much snazzier and snappier, and it doesn't seem like it's bickering with the transmission like the other one was. This just seems like a much better, much more modern setup, and it gets better fuel economy.
Well, but that's not what the concern is.
I know people buy a 4Runner or a Land Cruiser, right? And they're like, I'm going to drive this thing till I put a million miles on it. And nobody does, right? Nobody does.
Well,
what happens is after a few years, you get bored of it and you want the latest, greatest. And so people buy it for something that maybe it will never see. We just bought this Mercedes, which isn't here, with 500,000 miles. And I am not worthy of the man who or woman who drove that thing 500,000 miles.
So the fifth owner certainly is going to take it to 250,000 miles.
Sure.
But look, I think a lot of the concern around this engine is a little bit overblown because this is a global engine that they use in everything. I mean, we're talking Highlander.
It's been around a long time.
Not a long time.
But like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, but it's been in hundreds of thousands of Highlanders and Lexus NXs and Lexus RXs, and it's proven to be pretty good. And then everything you said is true. It's more fuel efficient. It's a lot more appropriate for high speed use, as in speeds over 48. The transmission is smooth, and it really is a very impressive little unit from a drivability standpoint, where the 4-liter at altitude was constantly struggling. So I really love this engine. I know people are going to give me some slack, and it does sound like a food processor.
Do you think that 90% of the people who hate this engine have never driven it in either a Tacoma or a 4Runner?
It's not going to matter. They're not going to change their mind.
That's kind of the internet, right? It doesn't matter whether you've actually had real experience or whether you've road tripped it like we have or whether you've off-roaded like we have. Your opinion is your opinion, and that's just as valuable as anybody else's, even though your opinion is just based on the fact that potentially you loved the old powertrain and don't like the fact that it has turbos.
I mean, and I don't want to discount people's opinions.
No, I'm not I don't mean to discount them, but it seems like a lot of people don't make up their mind before actually having gotten behind the wheel.
But their people's opinions are based in some reality.
Of course, I'm not saying that's not true.
Because people see smaller displacement, higher pressure, higher tolerance turbocharged engines, and that doesn't fill people with confidence. I mean, if you look at like the turbos from the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, they failed, and they failed a lot. But this is Toyota, right? They put this engine through a ton of testing, and they've proven that it can be long-lasting in other products, which is why I'm not that concerned about it in the 4Runner.
Look, Mercedes just put a 4-cylinder in an AMG. I think that's wrong. I'm not like a 4-cylinder apologist. I'm not trying to say that the 4-cylinder is the end-all be-all. Like every V8 loving American, I love the sound of that Corvette engine. I love the sound of the Aston Martin engine. I love V8s. But for this use, right, this is not a race car. It's not a sports car. It's not a performance car. For this particular use, I think this is a good powertrain for this vehicle.
I mean, people also don't want to pay more for less cylinders, and that's a very valid complaint.
But you're paying more for better fuel economy, and that's a very valid point.
Yeah, but are you paying for $10,000 worth of more fuel economy?
It's like two or three better than the outgoing one.
That's the problem. So I understand people.
True that.
I understand the concern, and I think that a lot of that is valid. But where that price difference does come into play is the livability. Okay. The car is much better to drive.
All right. You're also getting more horsepower. You're also getting more torque, which means more pulling power. You know, more acceleration. And are people forgetting about that?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. But they don't buy a 4Runner for pulling power.
Well,
right?
Well, if you're towing, people tow with these things.
Yeah. And you know? I think all you think said is valid, and I think a lot of people's complaints are also valid. But I would say I wouldn't not buy the sixth generation because of the powertrain. I think it is a step up.
I mean, my biggest complaint with it is this TRD off-road premium was $57,000.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's the problem, is you're paying $57,000 for a four-cylinder.
I don't care. Like, to me, the number of cylinders really doesn't matter.
But to a lot of people, it does.
I agree. But to me, if this is the right powertrain for the right car, I'm good with that. So it's not like I'm paying 57 for two fewer cylinders. That part doesn't bother me. The part that bothers me is I'm paying $57,000 for a 4Runner. That just seems like too much.
Yeah, I agree.
So they made it longer, Tommy, like 2.5 inches longer. Why don't you get in the back? Most of that has apparently gone in the back seat, but it still seems a little tight. Now, the front seat is all the way back, so I don't think that's fair.
Well, this is my driving position, so let's see how it is at 6 feet tall. I mean, it's a little cramped. I think you're right. It's better than the old one. But I do think that they should have put a little bit more wheelbase in it to get some more rear seat space. But the rear seats are comfortable, and you do have air vents, which is good. And the headroom is good, too. You get kind of like a stadium effect, which I think is always good in a back seat.
And then there's, over here, there's just a ton of room behind the back seat. It does, of course, have the rear window that comes down, so if you do want to have that kind of open air experience. But look at all that room back there, Tommy. That's pretty big. That will fit like a 2-kid stroller, now if you're looking as a family car.
You can get it with the third row. I haven't experienced it with a third row. I imagine it's really small. And you can also get it with the hybrid, but if I recall, you lose some trunk space.
About 4 inches.
Yeah, which is pretty significant.
Because the battery lives right there, and so the hybrid would be this much. Personally, I wouldn't get the hybrid in this, because Toyota's trucks, and this is a truck as Toyota defines it, use the hybrid for power as opposed to fuel economy, so you only get like 2 mpg better. I'm not sure it's worth the extra cost.
That's exactly right. I mean, and the power, from my experience with the Land Cruiser, the torque is way up. It's like 465, I think, if I remember correctly. But the real world difference doesn't feel that big when you're driving them. Maybe back to back you'd notice, but just hopping one and then hopping in the other. Maybe it'll be different with the 4Runner, but at least with the Land Cruiser, it doesn't feel like it has that much crazy
now,
torque.
Now, speaking of the Land Cruiser, Tommy, that's another one of my issues with it. So let's close the garage, and I'll show them what my issue is while you close the garage, and we'll take it for a ride. So come on over here, Cole. If you look over here, why don't you go on the other side, because it'll be easier to see. What you have in the 4Runner is obviously four-wheel drive, but it doesn't have auto four-wheel drive, so you have two high, four high, and four low. And unlike the Land Cruiser, which is four high, which is basically in four high all the time, here you have to actually select it. And what that means is that if you forget to put it in four high when there's snow, you're going to spin out. And when you do put it in four high, it will crab, unlike the Land Cruiser. So most cars that are $50,000+ do have four auto, like the Land Cruiser. But I think what they've done is, to separate this from the Land Cruiser, they've basically taken that feature away. Would you agree, Tommy?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a different architecture, though, right? I mean, it is T and GIF. Yep. It's all kind of the same.
Yep.
But that uses a full-time system with a center diff, where this is a selectable system, more like the Tacoma, which has its pros and its cons.
Shall we take a ride to lunch?
Yeah, let's talk about the interior here. So I think that even though it is expensive, it has gained a ton of luxury features. Heated steering wheel, heated seats, ventilated seats, right?
But only one zone climate.
That's weird. That is weird.
And this plastic here is not great.
Yeah, so I think, like, from a feature standpoint, the 4Runner is worth the money. From an interior quality standpoint, it's a little cheap in here.
All right, Tommy, we've got the vehicle on the road. Let me just give you a real quick synopsis of the top three things I don't like about this car, and then I'll tell you what I like about it, okay? Number one, I don't like the fact that we're missing some buttons right here. As you can see, we paid $57,000, and for instance, I know we didn't get the disconnectable sway bar, but there's got to be a more elegant way than having you be reminded of the fact that there's more stuff that you can get. So that's number three. Number two is this. What do you think of that? The plastics are pretty hard.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, they're pretty rough.
And number one, the thing that I really am having a struggle with are the instruments. You would think a lot of the ADAS stuff would be right there, but it's not. It's actually buried way down there in the screen. as opposed to having it be in this big screen. So I'm really struggling with configuring it. And we've owned the Tacoma, which has basically the same operating system, and yet I still have a hard time figuring out, like, how do I turn off the lane keep? So okay. Those are my three things that really bother me. Do you want to talk about yours, or do you want to talk about what you like about it?
No, I think you should go. You're on a roll. Why don't you keep going about what you like about it?
All right, so the top three things that I like about it. First and foremost, I think that this car has a lot of bandwidth. So you can use it for everything from off-roading to being on the road, and I think that's great. It, of course, competes with the Bronco and the Wrangler, and those are very hardcore off-roaders. So I always believe, like, buy a car for what you use it for, and what we use it for is, of course, being on-road, and this has just a lot of bandwidth for everything from a commuter car to a family car to a adventure car. So it does a lot of things really well. I think Toyota really nailed it in that regard. I also like this, Tommy.
Transmission selector?
Yeah, it's cool. Not round, not square, not buttons. It's just a big old lever, and it's really easy to use. And thank you, Toyota, for not reinventing the wheels in a lot of ways. And that kind of goes into the first thing I like about it, which are these real controls. So real buttons here, big old knobs to actually be able to use them with gloves on. It's just very simple and very intuitive. And I love that. All right, your turn.
Yeah, I think as a whole, the drivability of this car, as you mentioned, is much improved. I think that steering is better. I think that the powertrain is a lot more responsive. The ride's a little choppy in this 4Runner.
But there are different variations of this, right? So it starts off with the SR5 and then goes all the way up to the Trail Hunter or the TRD Pro, and they all have different suspension. So that's this particular one, the TRD Off-Road.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't spent any time with the Trail Hunter or the Pro or even a base model I'd like to try.
Starts at about 40.
So I think that's one of my downsides. I think that the tech and the radio especially are really good. This is the JBL Premium Audio System, which sounds really good. You got the little speaker built in the dash.
I like the speaker. I know it's kind of gimmicky, but I like it. I haven't used it yet for, like, tailgating, but I will. It's pretty cool because it's always getting charged up when sitting here. And, of course, Rivian has done this in their vehicles, too, but I like it.
Yeah, and then I think that, you know, the fuel economy is much improved. We ran 22 mpg on the highway. Listen, I know in the previous video I said it could be better. It could always be better. But when you consider that at the same speeds, a fifth gen would probably do 16 to 18. We're talking 75 miles an hour. It just means less time at the pump, which is a huge benefit for me. And then I think that the capability is great, too. This is still the sweet spot in the capability lineup, the TRD Off-Road, with the locking diff, with the crawl control. The crawl control is much better than the previous generation. It's a lot smoother. I think that the multi-terrain select integration is much better as well. So there's a lot of big improvements, I think, from an off-road standpoint. And the capability envelope on this car is so high. I don't think it's quite as good as a Rubicon or a Sasquatch Bronco, but it's going to be enough for 99% of people.
Yeah, and is there anything you don't like?
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned the ride. I think that the ride is choppy. And then I think, like, it just comes down to the price for me. You mentioned at the base end that they're pretty much similar. Like
to the outgoing model, yeah.
42 starting, somewhere
the SR5s, yeah.
Yeah, but when you get into, like, the high 50s and low 60s, you're looking at a $8,000 delta between the two. And
not including any markups or tariffs.
Yeah, it just gets a little pricey. I think it gets a little expensive on the top end, especially when you get into the Trail Hunters. So I would avoid those ones and stay as low as you can with how many features you can realistically live without. And I think it's a great vehicle. I mean, especially the powertrain is just so much better from an everyday standpoint.
So here's a little secret I think all of you guys know, but I should say it anyway. The reason that people will take out a loan, I think, and buy this car even at $57,000 is because 3 years from now, it will still be worth a pretty serious part of that $57,000, right? These things hold their value. They don't depreciate. The residuals are incredible.
Well, they did. We don't know for sure.
True that. Yeah, they did. We don't know on the new one. But if the first five generations are anything to go by, this vehicle is going to easily go into 200,000 miles. And even at 200,000 miles, it will still have value, which, you know, most of these cars won't. So why don't you see how the power is getting on the highway?
Well, I was going to say, here's the reason to buy one. There's a fifth gen 4Runner behind us.
Okay.
And she's going to be all out trying to get up to 65 miles an hour here, where I can just roll into the throttle, gently downshift the cog because there's 8 of them on the transmission, and it'll rev out. You don't really have to rev it out though because it makes so much torque deep or early into the power band, and then we're already at 70 up a hill, which in the old one was just never going to happen.
So my bottom line as we wrap this up, after owning it for almost 2 months, is that if I could only have one car for the rest of my life,
be a C3 Corvette.
No, it would be a 4Runner. I'm serious. If I could only have one car that does it all, that goes in the snow, that takes me off-road, that takes my friends to lunch, you know, that will last and won't spend with a lot of time at the dealership, I think this would be the car that I would own. It's very comfortable, right? It's big enough for somebody who is 6'2 and 12 pounds, and it's tall enough that I like the fact that I'm looking down on most cars. I like the design of it. There's just a lot to love about this car. That's what I mean. It's got the most bandwidth. So, like I said, if there's only one car I could have for the rest of my life, this would be it.
Yeah, this wouldn't be it.
Okay, what would be the one car you would have for the rest of your life?
I only get one car?
One car for the rest of your life.
Well, it'd be something really interesting, like an Aston Martin DB12.
Sure, and then when your kid's born, what are you going to do? If you have a kid or a
it's
big
got
dog.
Back seats. I'm not going to let, like...
No, come on, Tommy. Please take it seriously.
Oh, real talk, it'll be a Land Rover LR3.
Okay, fair. Yeah. All right.
I think that this is a really good car, and it's the best 4Runner they've ever made, and all the comments... I mean, that's kind of an impossible question as a car person, Dan.
That's one of those car games that people love to play.
Didn't last week you tell me if I could only drive one car forever, it'd be a Maverick?
Was it? Would I say that? Well, that changes.
That's my point, exactly. I just think that, like, that's bold to say that this would be the only...
No, given the choice between the Maverick, which we have, the four-wheel drive hybrid, and this, I would take this. This just has more bandwidth. I love trucks, don't get me wrong, and I think it's great fuel economy, but God help you if you had to put somebody in the back seat. Cole, would you want to drive around the back of the Maverick? That's our videographer. He said no. Would you like to drive around the back of this? He
no,
said no,
it's
too.
Also no. It's a double no. It's both a no.
All right, Cole, what would you buy?
2007
V6 RAV4. There you go. 07 RAV4.
He already has it. There you go, yeah.
But so. my point is, I like this car a lot, and I think that it's the best generation of 4Runner they've ever done. And according to the internet, the best generation of the 4Runner they've ever done is always the previous one.
Yes, it is.
They said that in the 4th to the 3rd, and the 5th to the 4th, now
the
6th. The
8
one
was pretty sweet.
Well, that's what all the 5th gen people haters said. But yeah, I think that this is going to go down in history, and people are going to come around to it in a big way. And it's going to take a few years, and people are going to be grumpy about it, but if you actually live with one, you're going to be vastly impressed over the 5th gen.
Yeah, and my only issue is the white. I wish that we'd have a better color palette.
Well, there's
right?
not a lot of great colors. The blue is pretty cool.
The blue is pretty cool, but most of them are like gray, black, white, gray, and gray.
Yeah, but yeah, I really do like driving it. It's a really nice car to drive as a whole.
All right, well, there you have it, guys. Thank you for joining us for this very unique episode of TFL Talk. And it's been more than talk. It's been a lot of showing. So if you're listening to this on one of the podcast channels, Spotify or Apple Podcast, and you want to see what we're talking about, you can head over to the YouTube channel TFL Talk, right, Tom? And you can actually see all this. We don't want to keep you guys out, of course, but every so often we do like to show and not just say. And of course, thank you to all our Patreons supporters. We have two other podcasts. Tommy's part of Carish, and of course Andre and Case are out there doing Talking Trucks. As always, head on over to where, Tommy?
OldTFL.com. You got to find all the stuff in one spot.
And it's time for some lunch. We'll see you next time. Ciao.
Hackers don't need much. Just one leaked password can potentially unlock a treasure trove of personal information, leading to stress, pain, and permanently wrecked credit. Don't be an easy target. Get protection by Aura today. Aura protects your identity, finances, and family, all in one powerful app. Get real-time alerts, safeguard your accounts, and block scams before they happen. If identity theft strikes, we help you recover. Stay protected at Aura.com/listen. That's AURA.com/listen.